All right, so welcome back, guys. I'm sitting here with Brenda Adelman. Did I say that right?
You did say Adelman. That right. Thank cool. you.
For a while, I was saying Adelman, and I just had a feeling it was wrong.
A lot of people do that.
Brenda's a really interesting person that I'm excited to interview because she's taken what would probably mess up a lot of people, to be honest. I mean, a pretty difficult kind of life situation. She's turned it into a really amazing show. So she's actually creating her own work. She's an actress here in LA, and really excited to be interviewing you. So thanks.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure. So, I mean, can we just tell us how you get started? You know, how did this whole thing kind of come about? How did you get the idea to use this material as a one-person show?
Well, what happened was I've been an actress for many, many years, and in 1995, I moved to Los Angeles from New York. I was already an actress, and I'd studied Shakespeare and been in theater companies, and then in 1995, my father killed my mother and married her sister, and it really devastated me, and 1 year after my mom's death, I auditioned to get into a theater company, and it was actually the exact date, 1 year anniversary, and I got in, and I just kind of saw it as a sign that I should get back to my life and use acting as a way to express myself. Then I got into one of the top acting classes in LA, and there was something called a personal storytelling exercise, but it took me a full two more years before I could even touch the material because I was so filled with shame and I was pretty devastated still, but kind of hiding. And I realized I had to do this personal story exercise to kind of be real and really put what I was living through on the stage. I was terrified, but I did it because that's all I knew. I was an actress. I knew how to express myself in that way. I wasn't expressing myself out in the world. And so I did this half-hour exercise really just for healing and to be real as an actress. And I got a standing ovation. But besides that, people started sharing with me things that they had kept secret, that they were ashamed about, all this stuff that I realized it kind of motivated me to keep going because I realized there was a lot of healing in what was happening. People were stepping up and talking about things they had hidden. And I hadn't had any idea that I was going to make it into a one-person show, but there was a director in the class and she wanted to direct me. So I started expanding it into a one-hour show. It had been a half an hour exercise. And then the director and I kind of parted ways amicably. And there was a woman who owns a small theater in Los Angeles. A friend of mine introduced me to her, and she wanted to produce and direct the show. And so I'd say it was about a full 2 years later or so that I put the show up for the first time in Los Angeles, and kind of just snowballed. It had a life of its own. That's the first part of it.
Wow. Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, it's a heavy story. I mean, you're I almost feel guilty talking about your
well,
that's the whole
point of what happens in my life. And, you know, that was 1995 and it's 2009 now. And so it wasn't always like that. Those first 3 years were really devastating for me. When I say I could not speak about anything, but what I learned is that by speaking about it, I started to heal. By speaking about it, like, I had thought in my head that everybody was going to judge me, and instead what I got was compassion from everybody, and it really helped my healing. In the beginning, doing the show and speaking about it helped my healing, and now with so many years later, well, what happened was, in short, I did stop doing the show after that first run in LA because I was still hurting. I was still in an on-again, off-again relationship with my father. And I would do the show, and by the way, there's a lot of humor in the show because, I don't know, I grew up in Brooklyn, yeah, and the big characters and everything like that, and I come from a comedic acting background, and there's Shakespeare in the show too because the storyline's very Shakespearean, but I would finish doing a performance and I would really feel bad, so I took 2 years off and got my master's degree in spiritual psychology from a university here in California, and that's where I really learned how to stop having this story, It's like my identity was not, oh, this is what happened to me. I learned how to be a victor in my life instead of the victim of my life. And so with all the skills I learned in that program, I then rewrote the show, ended up taking, in real life, taking my dad to court for the wrongful death of my mom. Healed a lot of issues with my brother. My brother and I have different fathers. And really, as I got empowered, I rewrote the show. And then and now the show is it's not for me in a healing way. It's more for the audience in a healing way. I do the show. I've done it for coalitions against domestic violence, for theater festivals internationally. I mean,
you've been invited all over the place to do this. I mean, last time I talked to you, you were doing it again in LA, but you had been traveling to, I think, was it Arizona or?
Yeah. Somewhere. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. For a children's advocacy program in Arizona, and also for the military, the Air Force base in Arizona. Yeah. And then I have an upcoming engagement. I'm talking right now with someone about bringing it to a woman's prison. And so that's what's been going on. So it just kind of naturally became something I knew how to do. I was an actor. I knew how to act. And the one woman show came about really from acting it on its feet. In those 2 years of creating it, I would rework it, rewrite it, put it on its feet, work with the director, put it in class, put it up in class, you know, get feedback, keep making it better. So it's really, it's an amazing show.
Yeah. I haven't seen it live, unfortunately, yet, but I've seen the video of it, and it really is pretty powerful. Can you talk a little bit about the process of putting this together? I mean, you said you went to a writing workshop, and then you kind of just started to almost like journal these things.
Well, yeah, the first thing that happened was 3 years after my mom's death, I hope I have all these dates correct. It was about there. I started writing poetry late at night. It wasn't from any kind of writing workshop. It was just kind of bearing my soul. I couldn't sleep at night. And, you know, right before I go to sleep, I'd be in that quasi-awake state, and I'd write these poems that were so filled with anger and rage and sexuality. And, you know, my parents had a very passionate relationship. And, then I'd go to sleep. I wake up in the morning and read them and kind of be horrified. Like, is that me? That came out of me? You know? And actually, it was so healthy because that rage was inside me. I had just been hiding it. And then when I was in that state of mind where I wasn't quite awake, I was able to express it and get it out of me. But there was one poem in particular called I Don't Remember. And that's a poem about my father always saying, I don't remember, when I asked him what happened. The facts were that his gun was never recovered, the gun that my mother was shot with. And there were 8 hours before the police were called. There was a cleanup. There was all this stuff. And I would ask him specifics, and he would never answer me. He'd say, I don't remember. So that was the poem that became the center point, the centerpiece for the whole one-person show. Then what would happen is I would work on it in my living room. I had a friend, I remember at the time, Jeff, come over, and I would just put the scene up, and I would be my father. I would be the police. I would be myself at different age stages, and then capture that. I'd put it up as an acting exercise, and then I'd write it down.
Cool. And you said you did that in the living room. Was that just for your friend? Like, you would actually just
I was working on it to put it up as the personal storytelling exercise.
Wow.
So he helped me. I think the first version I just wrote. I think I wrote it. It was much more narrative. And then as I got feedback in class, I went back and put it up on its feet and added more characters and stuff like that. And then I've been in several writing classes over the years. I'm a bit of a perfectionist when it comes to my art. Not in all areas of my life, but definitely in my art. And now when I do the show, I even set an intention, even though I've been doing the show for so many years now, that I want to learn something new about my family in each performance. So it's great, you know? I get to play all the characters and really move from judgment to, well, what if everybody really is just doing the best they can? And that's not condoning anything, but it's trying to understand why people make the choices they make.
One of the reasons I'm so excited to be sitting with you is because not only have you created this one person show out of, you know, so you're kind of creating your own work as an actor, but you've also started a business, and you're actually making an income helping people forgive the unforgivable people in their lives.
It's so amazing because it's like looking at your life and seeing how it comes back around full circle. Because, you know, I did my show and I went back to school to get a master's degree in spiritual psychology so that I could heal, not knowing that those tools would help me to create a structured system where I could help other people and teach other people. And that's exactly what happened. A few years ago, I was living in Sedona, probably around 3 years ago or so now. And I was doing the show. I've done the show for many spiritual communities, as you can imagine, because it's about forgiveness and the unforgivable and redemption and everything like that. And the minister said, after we were talking and talking about my show, and I was putting my show up the following week, he said, "You know, did you ever think about teaching these skills to people?" And I said, "No, I hadn't really thought about it." And he said, "I think it'd be a great idea for you to lead a workshop." And, you know, I was a little nervous, but, you know, I'm always up for a challenge or an opportunity. And I said, "Okay." And I couldn't believe how easy it was for me to, like, prepare that. I got so excited. It was really great for me to, you know, then I think that first workshop, there were about 20 people in it. And it just to teach them these skills and, you know, to hear how they came in with their unforgiveness and anger and this and that, and to really see how they were transformed and they finally had tools where they could use it in their own life. And the interesting thing is that, you know, usually in my workshops, when I can, I schedule the workshop after my performance, my one-person show, because half the people had gone to my show, their hearts are like wide open. They already know, you know, in some ways acting is like music where it can just open your heart without you having to do really hard work or anything like that. And then, you know, the other half would have to start from, you know, zero and like learn why forgiveness is for you, not the other person. And, you know, why it's healthy to forgive and it's not condoning the other person's action.
Jeez.
And then I coach, and I coach privately as well. And I lead teleseminars once a month. And I just created a membership site. I'm just really excited to reach more people. It's interesting because I have been doing this work for so many years. But it's like I said, I'm coming out with my first book called My Father Killed My Mother and Married My Aunt, Forgiving the Unforgivable. And laughing at the title.
Well, it's like, if that doesn't get you to read it, like,
well, that's what it is.
People are going to be like, oh, geez, or they're
right,
be like,
exactly.
Give me that copy.
I want the people to read it who will get the most out of it, you know, because I played around with, you know, Forgive and Be Free, A Pathway to Personal Happiness. But it's like, you know what? This is laced with my personal story, you know, so I felt this was more appropriate. This book is a workbook. It's like I said, it's laced with my story and my specifics and how I got through certain things after being devastated. And then it's a workbook with worksheets and exercises and things like that. And the reason I wrote this is because, you know, I wanted to write my memoir, but my memoir is much more in depth. And I have probably about 60 pages of my memoir, but that's actually not, I'm not ready for it yet. So part of my attitude and my joy and everything like that is knowing where I can go emotionally and where I'm ready to go, and then sharing from that place. So I'm really comfortable sharing with what I'm sharing now. And my goal is always to heal those parts of myself that are still hurt so that I can communicate, and I can communicate from a deeper place. So,
having done this work, and having written a show about it and having kind of done this coaching thing, what would you recommend? I mean, what kind of advice would you give to people who are maybe thinking about writing their own shows? Whether it's about personal stuff or not. I mean, you've been there and done that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's so great. I actually had the opportunity to coach someone recently on doing their one person show. She was an actress in LA who came to see my show twice. And, we had such a great time, and I was pleasantly surprised that it was really easy for me to really go for the depth. I think that if an actor is called to do a one person show, there's a reason for it. And there's many reasons. It could be to create your own work so that you're seen by a producer or a casting director or an agent, you know, to move your career to the next level. It could be because there's something personal that really needs to be worked out in your life. I mean, acting for me has always been incredibly healing for me, and doing the one-person show was just so incredibly healing. So, I mean, there's all different reasons. Some people just, you know, they want people to laugh, but, you know, the best shows, the best comedians that I go to are always people who really tap into truth and depth and then make humor from that. So I would encourage anybody who wants to do a one-person show to do it, to really seek out someone who can help them with it, because it's, I mean, I have probably, I mean, this, my one-woman show, my Brooklyn Hamlet, is complete now, but I probably have 26 copies, 26 drafts, not complete beginning to end.
Wow.
I said I'm a perfectionist, and so what I would do is I'd go to class, I'd put it up on its feet, then I started performing professionally, and I would hear where the laughter was, I would see where I could cut it, where I could make it more concise, and so I kept working on it, because you don't want to just, you know... One of the things that can happen when you're writing your own one-person show is you know this story so clearly that sometimes it doesn't get translated onto the page like that. So it's really important to have someone else read it or look at it and see it so that they can give you feedback. And to not take any feedback personally. You know, some of it's going to work, some of it's not going to work. So really get to know who you are so that you can write the show and put out the best show possible.
Yeah.
Make people laugh and cry. You know?
Writing is a pretty lonely experience, I think, generally speaking. But that's huge. I mean, you can't be too attached to your words. I mean, as an artist in general, you can't be too attached to your work because it's not going to land with everybody.
Exactly. And they also say, you know, be willing to throw out your darlings when you're writing. I've definitely taken out big chunks of my show that I ended up later putting back in. But yeah, not everyone's going to get it. But the people who get it are the ones that you want to reach. I have a good example from that. I use Shakespeare in my one-person show to represent the soliloquies from Hamlet, to represent my emotions when they're too much for me. Where a singer would break into song, I break into Shakespeare's soliloquies.
It's very cool.
And thank you. And I mean, I've gotten so wonderful feedback about it. And I've even been brought into schools to help teach kids about Shakespeare by like a principal who saw my show and things like that. And I have one point in the show where I represent the time when I wanted to kill myself. And that was, you know, that first year after my mom died. And I do the soliloquy from Hamlet, to be or not to be, to represent that. I have gotten... And I mean, it's very personal. I mix it with modern text as well. And I have had an endless number of people saying they loved that. It brought Shakespeare to life for them. It was so amazing. One time, several years ago, I had a woman come up to me and say, you know, I love the Shakespeare in the play, but you should really cut the to be or not to be because it's been so overdone. So I had a choice. It's like, do I accept that or do I take it personally or do I say, all right, that's her opinion. That's fine. But everybody else loves it. And I think it really fits. So when you're doing your own work, you really have to not take things personally and you have to check within and see, well, what resonates for you, you know, and be good enough at your craft so that you know.
Yeah, there's a saying I read somewhere once. It says, it's something along the... I'm going to butcher it, of course, but it's somewhere along the lines of, if one person tells you you're a horse, they're crazy. If five people tell you you're a horse, there's a conspiracy afoot. If 10 people tell you you're a horse, you better go get a saddle.
Something like that. That's,
you know,
good.
The idea being, of course, like, you know, don't listen to just one person, but if more and more people keep saying it.
Yeah, but, you know, as artists, we can get so touchy. And then when it's your own work, you can get so touchy. So you really have to just kind of take everything with a grain of salt. You know, be a professional. Seek out advice from people who really know what they're doing. Workshop it and you know, be true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like I'm true to myself. I feel like I'm on purpose when I'm doing the show, when I'm doing my forgiveness work. You know?
Yeah, well, it's amazing too because you've been invited to schools. I mean, you're doing your work and you're touching so many different people, and that's really the purpose of art, I think, in the first place. You know, in LA, we lose track of it. We think it's all about, like, let's get a job, a paying gig, and be on TV. And
in the end,
it's not about that at all.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, sometimes you get the gig by not going after the gig, but really just being true to your heart. And
we were just talking about that beforehand,
Yeah. I mean, one of the most wonderful things for me was a gig I did that I wasn't paid for. It was last... the summer before this, I was in Hawaii, where I won a Hero of Forgiveness Award from the Hawaii International Forgiveness Project. I didn't even know they gave awards out for that. It was caught me by surprise, but it was a wonderful, wonderful honor. Hawaii is a really beautiful place. Anyway, there was this woman there who invited me and asked me if I would want to come to her program. It was called Communities in Schools, and it was in a not-so-great part on Oahu for kids who were age 8 to 15 who are youth at risk. And she said nobody ever really comes down there and everything. And I love working with kids. And I said, yeah, that would be great. So I spent like 4 or 5 hours with these kids. And I started out, I have a digital story about my show. It's 4 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And I showed that to them. And they just really appreciated my honesty. And then we ended up having this, you know, lunch together and talking together. I did a few scenes from my show for them. And then I talked about forgiveness. And then at the end of the day, we went around the circle and asked, you know, what they learned about forgiveness. And it was amazing. I mean, these kids, you know, 8 years old, this one girl said she learned that it was okay to forgive her father and for leaving her. And it's just like, wow. I mean, she could have spent the rest of her life, you know, being angry. And, you know, and of course we all know anger turns into all kinds of things, you know, inability to have a relationship with, you know, loving relationship with someone else, being sick, all kinds of things. So felt it was really gratifying. What I have a goal to do, because like I said, I have done the show and spoken on forgiveness for domestic violence coalitions and things like that, is I'm going to announce right here, I have a goal to have my show off Broadway in a year. I mean, that's my timeline. I want to have financiers, producers in place and things like that so that I can combine and kind of realize that I can have an acting career and reach so many more people at the same time by going that route.
Yeah. Okay. So mid-October 2009.
Uh-oh.
Here it is. It's out there.
Yeah. It's out there.
Yeah. Well, that always is when you put it out there, it's, you know,
I want to put it out there. That's how I got the show up to begin with. Yeah. I announced it. I remember at this, there was like a weekend workshop in LA years ago. And I was like, I'm going to have my show produced by someone else in 1 year. And it was. And so now I'm, you know, up in the stakes a little bit. I really want to get a successful off-Broadway run in New York. It's cool. So New York, the show. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my Brooklyn hand. I mean, in the show, you speak with a Brooklyn accent.
I definitely do. You know what I'm saying? There it took a lot of money for me to get rid of my accent. With voice teachers. Yeah.
So do you have a show coming up in L.A.?
I don't have a show coming up in L.A. right now. I may, though, because the person, Matthew, who directed my last one, we just talked last night, and he's a member of theater company, so I may have one in the next few months. We're going to talk this week, and then I have the prison project in L.A. as mm-hmm. well with the women prisoners. That's a private showing. Wow. And then I have the reading of my book this Sunday at Book Soup at 7 p.m.
This Sunday, that is, what's today?
October 13th. 18th.
So October 18th. Hopefully we get to
October 18th at Book Soup at 7 p.m.
Yeah, that's very cool. Well, this has been fantastic. It's, again, I mean, I know I've said it, but and I'm not just saying it because the mics are running, but I'm really in awe of what you've done, not only as an actress, but personally, like, being able to forgive and move past something like that is pretty incredible.
I have one really cool story. One more cool story. Yeah. Can I say it? I don't know. I may have told you before. About my brother? I think I did. But it's such a great story. So my brother and I have different fathers. My brother's my older brother. And when my father took our mother's life, my brother immediately saw through the denial that I was in and wanted to take my father to court for the wrongful death of my mom and press charges and everything. And I was in denial and I was just kind of in shock. I didn't want to hear it. And to make a long story short, my brother and I stopped speaking for 6 years. And this was my brother I was really close to, and I felt really abandoned and angry. And especially angry that he didn't let me see my nephews my nephew at the time. I felt like, why does my nephew have to lose his grandmother and his aunt? Anyway, 6 years later, after my mom died, I made the decision to take my father to court for the wrongful death of my mother. Mm-hmm. And with that decision, it meant my brother and I would come together for that. And so I remember flying back to New York. My brother and I had barely spoken for those 6 years. And I applied every forgiveness tool that I learned at the University of Santa Monica and that I teach now so that I could meet my brother and let go of this anger and kind of have a united front in court. And I did. I forgave every judgment that I could think of, and I forgave myself for any, because what surfaced for me is I was really upset with myself for being so cold and hard-hearted to him. So I forgave myself for that as well. And my brother and I reunited. It was like, it was amazing when we saw each other. It was like all those years of anger and upset and story just melted away. And then a few years later, my brother runs the Jewish Theater of Vienna, Austria. he ended up inviting me to do my one-person show as a main act at this International Jewish Theater Festival in Vienna in 2007. And that was just another way that art, it's like my brother and I never really spoke about much, like what we had been through, but just the fact that he was bringing me in to do my one-person show, which was about his life as well. And then he asked me if his son, who was seven then, could sit in the audience because he had never told him how his grandmother died. And so there he was. And so it was so incredibly healing. And that's the thing about art. And I remember after the play, my brother and I led a Q&A afterwards together. One of his peers, his colleagues, came over to me and just burst out in tears and started hugging me and saying she had never known what happened in my brother's life because my brother couldn't talk about anything, but this was his way of letting everything out and letting people know who he really was. And then the next day, the funny part, my nephew, I was like, oh, how's my nephew going to take the show? But like I said, the show is very funny too. Mm-hmm. And that's what he connected to. The next day, my nephew was like, that was funny. Your dad called you Brenda Padenza, the great defender. You know? So yeah. His innocence was intact. And it was pretty incredibly healing though.
And that scene with your brother, some of that's in the show, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is, right, because you saw the video.
Yeah,
the
scene where you kind of reunite with him in the show.
The tearjerker, yeah. It is amazing.
So for anybody out there who might have someone in their lives who's difficult to forgive or kind of, you know, come to terms with, what if you had to give one piece of advice, what would you say?
What I would say, it has to do with Shakespeare, and I quote it in the show, which is, there is nothing either right or wrong, but thinking makes it so. I would say the advice would be to get enough leverage and distance so that you can take the rightness and wrongness out of the equation. Even if someone did something that appears terrible, as long as you're in that place of judging them, you're not going to be happy. And all of my work is about you being more joyous and more happy and kind of letting go of the burden of having to punish. And so it would be forgiving the judgments of the person. It's not necessarily it's a little complicated because the essence of a person ever has to be forgiven, but it's the act that they did that needs to be forgiven. So it's forgiving the judgments of what the person did. So let me give an example with my dad or my aunt. Let's do that since I'm still presently working on that. Mm-hmm. So my aunt married my father after he committed this crime. What I would say semantically is I forgive myself for judging my aunt, if this were true, and it certainly was in the past, as evil. I would identify what my judgment is. And then I would reframe it and say something like, the truth is my aunt was coming from a place of darkness. The truth is my aunt didn't know any better. I'm not letting the person off the hook. I'm not saying I want this person in my life. I'm never saying you should forgive and let a person back in your life, because I set a very clear boundary with my father. I forgave my father and I also didn't have him in my life. But I also had to move from right and wrong, and he's wrong and I'm right, to it just is. So that was a long way of saying that you're moving into acceptance of what is, because as long as you're making something wrong, not only are you not in the present moment, you're in the past. So you're draining your energy and you're giving your power over to the other person or the situation. It can be a little complicated, but it's moving into acceptance of what is. It's like you're not a better person because you say someone else is wrong. And this is my issue. I have been very righteous my whole life. So I am teaching from what I've learned. As long as I stay on an issue and I say, you're wrong, I disempower myself. So that's why the forgiveness of judgments is so important, so that you're more empowered. As long as someone is, let's say, blaming an ex-girlfriend, an ex-boyfriend, how are they going to have their heart open to really allow someone else into their life? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's that right or wrong. If you just say, okay, this is what it is, we're broken up, maybe I didn't get any closure, but it's okay, and you get back to the present moment, then you have possibilities of all kinds of good things coming in.
Mm-hmm. That's very powerful. Well, thanks so much for sitting down with us today. Again, this is Brenda Edelman. The website is forgivenessandfreedom.com.
Forgivenessandfreedom.com.
Yeah, forgiveness and freedom, all spelled out, all one word, .com. And there's also a trailer for show, My Brooklyn Hamlet, which may be
done by a wonderful editor. Yeah.
I wonder who that could be.
Trevor.
Wink, that's much.
The show may be renamed from My Brooklyn Hamlet to My Father Killed My Mother and Married My Aunt, a one-woman show about forgiving the unforgivable.
Mm-hmm. Great. So check it out, everybody. Brenda, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Trevor, what would you say, because you were in the room with her and just, you know, you're the one that interviewed her, what would you say is like the one takeaway from the, I mean, I'm sure that you have many takeaways from it, but what would you say be the biggest takeaway for you?
You know, I think what it is, and I've thought a lot about this lately since talking to her, is that she's one of those people that really allows you to be yourself. Just her energy and her presence allows you to just kind of be who you are and really own that. And she doesn't judge. You don't feel any judgment from her. You don't feel any criticism coming from her about anything stupid you might say or do. It's like nothing's inappropriate because you're both human, you're both imperfect. And this is just a weird kind of wisdom that's communicated non-verbally the moment you see her. The way I felt a little self-conscious around her because it was so comfortable.
Interesting.
And I think that's
what she said, that about that class that she was in, and how students, after seeing her performance, were all of a sudden so willing to share their stories. And
yeah,
I found that amazing. And actually, it sort of makes sense that she was able to start this business of hers, because she was like, well, if I can help these people, you know, better themselves.
Yeah.
Or not better themselves, but, you know, come to terms with whatever it is they need to come to terms with. You know, maybe she was just lucky enough to, or not maybe, but I think she was just lucky enough to recognize this gift that she had. That's so funny that you experienced that in the one time meeting her in person. That's great.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I think that's the biggest gift you can give to anybody, is just the gift of allowing them to be themselves around you.
Yeah.
I know a few people like that, and it's amazing. They're extremely powerful people, not like in any sort of like quantifiable monetary way, but just being around them. I hope you guys enjoyed that. There will be more information on Brenda at our website, insideactingpodcast.com. We hope you guys visit it. Please subscribe. You can actually subscribe to that site and be updated in the RSS feed if you're familiar with how that stuff works. Right on the site, or of course, to make things easier, you can subscribe to us in iTunes. Just give us a search at insideactingpodcast.com. Hopefully, by the time this episode gets to your ears, we'll have this podcast up and running on iTunes.
Great. And we talked about earlier, you know, submitting questions that we can read and discuss on the podcast. We would love, love, love your input, your questions, your comments, whatever it is. We really want this to be a collective experience. We don't want it to just be our two voices. That's why we're doing the interviews. That's why we're asking you for your comments. So if we could get your comments on the air or on the podcast, you know, and just... if that leads to, you know, some kind of discussion, I think it's going to benefit all of us. So if you want to send in your comments, you can email us at insideactingpodcast@gmail.com. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Insideactingpodcast@gmail.com. We'll also, of course, put that on the website. You can find us there, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you're interested in following us on Twitter, my Twitter account is twitter.com/digitalactor. That's my sort of personal professional account. I'm thinking about starting up a second professional account, which we can talk about. I'm sure at some point you and I will have a whole episode dedicated to social media.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We've actually got an interview lined up for that, which I'm really excited about.
That's great.
Really,
that's going to be a good episode. That's going to be a good episode, because Trevor and I have been sort of trying to perfect the use of new media and as actors, how that can influence your marketing ability, and all of that, but we'll save that for another time. But twitter.com/digitalactor, and Trevor, you're at?
I'm at twitter.com/TrevorAlgott, and it's A-L-G-A-T-T. We'll have links on our bios on the website. You can also go to get the exact spellings of all this stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so please follow us on there. We love hearing from people. We love communicating that way. It's a lot of fun. So shoot us a tweet. You can also, we would also love it, and this is, of course, not necessary, but this would make our jobs a lot easier. We've got a donate button up on the website. No amount is too small. This podcast is definitely and always will be free for everybody to listen to, but unfortunately for us, it's not free to produce. We have equipment, file hosting, and transportation costs. So any dollar amount that you can contribute will be hugely appreciated, and we'll give you a shout out on the podcast. I think that's actually a tax deduction as well.
Yeah, well, it's a donation.
Donation. So write it off in your taxes. And we'll have a whole tax episode, too, because I'm very into the money thing. In fact, the next episode, we've got lined up a great interview with a guy named Brian, who is kind of a personal finance guru, really. I would kind of put him in that category. And he really connects the bridge between personal finance and spirituality. And kind of, not spirituality. I don't want to get too new age woo-woo, mm-hmm. but
woo-woo.
Yeah, but he connects the dots between the kind of human aspect of money and the cold hard numbers.
Great. Well, there's a great preview of our next episode, episode two of Inside Acting Podcast. We look forward to hearing from you guys, and we look forward to meeting you all via Twitter and email and the podcast over the next weeks and months and years. So for Inside Acting Podcast, this is Albert Meyer.
And this is Trevor Algott signing off.